Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
All right, welcome in everyone on this Wednesday, August 18th. On today's show, could Bitcoin save Afghanistan? Could it have prevented the entire dilemma that we've been seeing unfolding? Was the solution there right in front of our eyes the entire time? And also on the show today, a progressive stimulus plan brings monthly checks and a complete rethinking of how we measure success in this economy. Will Manchin, the moderate Democrats, go along with it? We'll see. And America doesn't have a labor shortage. In fact, it has a massive wage shortage. We're going to show you some new troubling data this morning and a group of people that are saying, we're fed up with this. We are striking. We want better wages. We want better working conditions. Will you give it to us? We'll see if those big corporations will actually do it. It's time to get uncomfortable, everyone. Morning Invest starts right now. Top of the morning to you. Top of the muffin to you. Welcome into the show. I hope everyone is doing well on this Wednesday. It's hard to believe that the summer's almost over. So many kids already back to school. I was really hoping that my kids would be back to school already.
What? Come on, man.
Yeah, I know. I know. I shouldn't say it, but you're not supposed to say that. But
well,
every parent.
It's not like they watch the show.
You know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. You know, pick up that's my little girl. She's eating her she was eating vegetables and she dropped one on the floor. Like, we're trying to get them out of the house. She's going to go with Grammy to the beach. She just drops a vegetable on the floor and she goes, Mommy, I dropped something on the floor. She's 4 years old. We're like, pick it up.
Miles, if you're watching, I apologize. Miles is just like, I'm going to tune into the show today. Oh my, yeah. Did my dad just say he wishes that? What? Oh,
what?
Man. He's going to go play some play sad songs on the piano.
He's like, I don't want to go back to school. I want to hang home. Maybe I do want to go back to school, be with my friends. All right, we got a jam-packed show for you on the old broadcast for you today. So let's start with our top story this morning, Bitcoin saving Afghanistan. You know, the West continues to worry about the Taliban, of course, the ruling in Afghanistan. But the Taliban says that they mean right now no harm, and they are going to respect women's rights. A Taliban spokesperson held a news conference on Tuesday, assuring the world that they are just a more moderate group now. You know, we're the softer, gentler Taliban. I mean, I don't know. Does anyone really believe that, by the way?
Is that where they're going to paint over pictures of women on buildings instead of just destroy the building?
Right. Yeah. They'll nicely ask women to not drive. They'll nicely ask women to cover their faces and legs, right? But we'll see, right? I mean, I don't know. They purport to be Islamic fundamentalists, so we'll see if they adhere to that what they considered their Islamic law. We'll see. Here's a question.
I mean, maybe what they'll do is they'll actually use all the training that we've given them over the years. I mean, we pretty much created and helped create them, so maybe they'll use all the stuff we taught them, because we obviously taught them the right way to run a democracy. You know, we were at least helping them pay them to learn how to protect one or create one or something. So hopefully all of that great stuff we gave them over the years just comes in super handy.
Yeah. I mean, look, we gave them helicopters. We gave them Black Hawk helicopters. We gave them weapons, or not directly. We gave them to the Afghan army, who then laid them down in front of the Taliban, and then they were able to seize them. So, you know, in a roundabout way, we gave that stuff over to them. But here's a question. Do we find that hard to believe because the media tells us that the Taliban is not going to change or is not going to have a government that would actually lead its people? I mean, who knows, right? I mean, if you tune into the mainstream media, they're telling you that it's never going to happen, right?
Think about this, though. Well, the Taliban's main goal was probably, outside of us training them and everything, was to get us the hell out of there in the first place.
Right.
So if we're the hell out of there, maybe if we're gone, they could actually come to some sort of government on their own that they could progress. We don't know. Just because, you know, like we're a terrorist organization, if you want to call a terrorist organization, you know, call a spade a spade. And, you know, we're coming back here like nobody's holding us, like thinking that we're going to come back here and just destroy our country and take away women's rights, even though we're not feeding people. We got a huge swath of hunger and everything in this country. That stuff doesn't matter, but maybe they're going to do well. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe we give them an opportunity to. Well, actually, we have no choice, right? But the honest answer is we don't know. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen, right? I mean, the Taliban leader gave an interview to a female news anchor on Tuesday, which is pretty shocking, something that the Taliban of old would not have done, right?
Right. And you know what the bottom line is, though? It's not our problem.
Right.
It's not our problem.
It's not our problem. You know, although George W. Bush, who I love, Caitlin Johnston wrote a piece yesterday. She said, you know, now's the time for George W. Bush to shut the F up. Like, he should not be talking right now. The guy that go paint dog pictures. The guy that got us into a 20-year war, you know, is now sticking his nose in saying how sad he is for the humanitarian plight of the people. Right. If he was so concerned about that, then he wouldn't have been bombing them indiscriminately for many, many years. And he said that this Taliban leader said he said that women's rights would be protected under the new regime, but gave no details of how exactly they would be protected. He also promised that no Afghans would be punished for having helped the former Western government or Western forces. Great. But another interesting plan is emerging this morning that could potentially change Afghanistan forever. And I don't want to bury the lead here, but it has to do with Bitcoin, and it could have saved it from the ruin that it's in right now. So a lot of Bitcoin maximalists, these are people who believe in many ways. I'm not a big Bitcoin maximalist. I'm certainly a Bitcoin supporter and I own a lot of Bitcoin, but I'm not like a Michael Saylor in that I think it is the only cryptocurrency that could help the world. I believe in others as well, Ethereum and so forth. But Bitcoin maximalists also wondered basically out loud how the cryptocurrency could fix the country's problems, Afghanistan's problems. Or if it could have totally prevented the war there in the first place. Eric Voorhees, one of the Bitcoin's early public advocates and CEOs, sent this out. And he said, an enormous amount of cash just fell into the hands of the Taliban. Because cash can't be truly secured. And he said, basically, he said that people in Afghanistan are trying to withdraw their money from banks, but the top bankers have all left town. Likely no Afghans will get any of their hard-earned money back. This should show you how important Bitcoin is for the world.
But how would they have gotten their money. Bitcoin either?
Well, it's all in a digital wallet. You don't need to go to a bank. I mean, this is the exact same thing that happened to Greece. Like, when will we learn our lesson, right?
Right, but won't infrastructure... So if banks are going down, won't infrastructure go down too as far as internet and stuff? You know, like, who's upkeeping all that stuff? Like...
If you've got Wi-Fi, if you've got cellular service in some capacity, if you've got Wi-Fi somewhere, someone's going to have Wi-Fi. There's going to be some way to get online, right? There's going to be some hotspot that you could have access to. But the bottom line is, like, you know, it's all digital, so it would be held to you permanently to your digital wallet, like a run on the bank, like we saw in Greece when they had their crisis. People went to the Grecian banks to try to get their money out, and the Greek banks were like, "We don't have your money." Like, wait a second, that doesn't make sense because I took my Greek fiat currency and put it into your bank. What the hell happened? Where's my money? We don't have it because we don't have to hold your money in a bank because that's the law. You know, that's how bankers' laws work. You put $100 in the bank, they don't have to hold $100 in the bank. They can lend out your $100 now fully as a mortgage to someone else.
It's like, I don't have your money. I don't have your money. It's in Tom's house. It's in Fred's house.
Yeah, go check his house. It's not here. But with, you know, if you understand Afghanistan, you understand obviously Afghanistan is, the situation there is incredibly complex. But fundamentally, it's a symptom of a military empire having overextended itself. And we shouldn't pretend that Bitcoin will fix the immediate suffering there. But it absolutely helps solve the problem of empire by starving the empire of tax revenues, and it would curtail its ability to print currency for funding of wars. Think about that. Like, if you don't have this kind of currency, you can't be funded. How are you going to foot the bill for this? You were using poppy fields before, right? They were selling heroin basically to the United States and the rest of the world to fund the wars, right? Well, if you don't have that currency, how are you going to fight these wars? Not only that, it's an empowering piece of the equation here. Because if you think about this, you know, as Jimmy Song tweets here, our government has stolen trillions in value from us to fund a war that did nothing but bring death and destruction to millions. Bitcoin can't come fast enough. Yeah, imagine if the government couldn't steal money from us to fight this type of war. I mean, if you think about it, it's a multi-pronged question here, right? Because Bitcoin, right? A Bitcoin world is a world of smaller governments that don't invade and they don't occupy foreign nations for 20 years, right? The bigger the country is, then you have the violence and destruction. But even in a war-torn, poverty-stricken country, Bitcoin can still help. You know, if you're your own bank, then you don't have to worry about a run on the bank, right? You don't have to worry about whether or not the bankers are even in town anymore.
And the more we keep things out of their control, the better. Because, like, you know, imagine if they didn't have as much pull over our finances. It's like anything that you want the quality to go down and the price to go up, give it to the federal government. And right. Because, like, they can't manage anything. But if we had our own money system and they weren't in control of it, they couldn't take our money and do what they're doing with it. They couldn't start all these wars and everything. Like, you know, we could pay our, you know, like, because right now, if they want our money, they can take it by force. It's funny. I had no idea, but I had child support that I paid back in the, this was a long time ago. And there was a fee, I guess, every year that you had to pay for the child support that I was never aware of. And then one day I just had like $800 come out of my bank account. And I was like, what in the heck? $800 just disappeared out of my account. The government totally had access to go in and just take money right out of my account.
Wow.
You know, and they couldn't do that with my Bitcoin wallet.
No, it's the same thing that happened during stimulus, right? I mean, so many people who had issues with government, like the government was able to steal their money right out of their account when they got their stimulus payments, right? But I think this is a really interesting case here that Bitcoiners think a crisis in Afghanistan could have been prevented with Bitcoin. I mean, think about it, right? The government couldn't, as they're taking over these towns, seizing weapons, seizing money, they're seizing all sorts of capital. They're seizing U.S. dollars, just bags and bags of U.S. dollars, right? Then on top of that, the people try to go and get money out of the bank, and they can't. So they're relying on this fiat government currency. They're there in the lines at the bank, and all the bankers have left town. They can't get any money. Now they're screwed. So not only would it not have funded the actual war and the takeover, it would have actually helped the people who are now trying to leave and get out of this. It might not have ever happened. They might not have had to get out of the way of anything. Right? Like the steamroller that's now rolling through there, they might not have had to leave at all. I mean, if you think about it, none of the, you know, and what they're basically saying here is that none of this, from U.S. military intervention in the first place to yesterday's bank run, would have happened had it been for Bitcoin. Some of the staunchest supporters of Bitcoin argue. This should show you how important Bitcoin is for the world. Control your money. I mean,
and the thing is too, like, yeah, that is possible. But if the infrastructure is not there, like, who in Afghanistan is taking Bitcoin as payment? They can't go to the grocery store and use their Bitcoin. They can't go to the fast food restaurants and use their Bitcoin. Like
I'm arguing, and I think what they're arguing is that if that infrastructure was there, like El Salvador, yeah. You know, El Salvador is going to be official with Bitcoin in just a few weeks. I think September, I forget the exact date in September. El Salvador will adopt it as legal tender, and they will not charge you a transaction fee or anything like that. You can go to the store and use it as legal tender. So if they had that infrastructure set up, then that's where this would be. And what I'm saying is, if the infrastructure was there and if Bitcoin was the standard and if we use this as a standard, we wouldn't have this war and we wouldn't have these people starving. We wouldn't have these people trying to flee, run to the bank to try to get money out, this worthless currency. Like, what good is Afghanistan currency right now? I mean, you want to trade some Bitcoin for Afghanistan currency?
And think of how many things around the world are manipulated by basically the U.S. dollar. I mean, our dollar is probably the most manipulative. But think about how many lives money manipulates, and if we could have complete control. So I agree with it, but I want, you know, it's like, why is there such a slow rollout on the infrastructure?
Well, I think because you have these governments who are scared of it, and it seems like you have a lot of third world countries right now who are adopting it. You have countries in Africa that are now saying we're going to make Bitcoin a standard, legal tender. El Salvador moving, you know, at making it a legal tender. And it's a lot of the countries that have struggled with poverty are now saying, we see this as our salvation. Like, this could become our salvation. Won't it be interesting to see these countries who have for just thousands of years, hundreds of years, been under the heel of the empires, you know, the British Empire, the American Empire, the German Empire, all of these countries that have just been stomped on for generations, now adopt an entirely different standard and become some of the wealthiest countries in the world? I mean, I'm just waiting for that to happen. It's going to happen.
And I think, yeah, and I think, well, too, and I think you're right, but I think it also, you know, you have those countries, the countries that are embracing it, but I think that there are some countries that feel like, you know, the government's going to lose power if they incorporate that system. You know, like, yeah, they're like, okay, we can't let this happen because then we're going to lose control. And you guys know how we can manipulate markets. We can manipulate people. We can get them to do what we want through the money that we control and we can print. But, you know, without that, they lose that.
Right. And that's China, right? I mean, China fears Bitcoin, fears cryptocurrency.
Well, that's us too.
We do, you know, and I'm waiting to see on this. You know, I interviewed Ron Paul on my show a few months ago, and one of the things he said is he's a big proponent of cryptocurrency and Bitcoin, but he's always skeptical, of course, of government, and he believes, well, government's paying lip service that they're supportive of cryptocurrency and Bitcoin, et cetera, but I'll wait and see whether or not the Fed is going to yield power, right? Are they going to, you know, the U.S. dollar or Bitcoin? Is the Fed going to allow Bitcoin to become some sort of a major standard in the United States? But I don't know that they have a choice. I mean, what are you going to do? Well, other than strip mining capabilities out of people's hands? I mean, what are you going to do?
I think the legislation, though, that we just saw with all the Bitcoin language and going after Bitcoin investors and stuff like that shows us that they're scared of it or that they don't want it. I would think that means that means some big money somewhere doesn't want this.
Yeah, and I think, though, you also saw on the other side of it, you saw the Bitcoin lobby come together. I mean, Elon Musk and all of these people, and they got the language removed. So that force, it showed that in Washington, that was a force to be reckoned with. And I was happy about that. Like, they all came together and said, no, get this language out of these bills. And they did. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what the future holds in government. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Drop me a comment below. Do you think Bitcoin could or could save Afghanistan or could have saved Afghanistan? Drop me a note below in the comments thread. I mean, just look at the value. Look at Bitcoin, you know, like Ethereum, Bitcoin rocketing up. Imagine if, like, the Afghan people had a currency, had a currency that, you know, is up 600% this year. You know, imagine that. Instead of standing in lines like this, you know, hoping to get some money out of this crappy bank.
Isn't it crazy to think that, you know, like the lobbyist thing, like lobbyists can go into Washington and they can lobby and pay money to get something in a bill. And then other people can go lobby and get it out of a bill. But we can't say a damn thing. We can't, like, our voices that we're saying, no, that's not what we want. That's not what we want. That doesn't matter. You have to buy legislation.
Right. You have to be Elon Musk and have billions.
Yeah.
You know, and
because otherwise that would have been in that bill. And, you know, what mm-hmm. would have happened then to Bitcoin? Like, people would be paying they just wanted it taxed or what? Right.
They wanted to treat everybody who had, like, basically a digital wallet as a broker. So if you had a digital wallet and you could buy and sell Bitcoin, like, then you were a broker subject to brokerage laws. Like, what? So you mean my Coinbase account? I'm now a broker?
That's okay. Like, if I buy my own house, I have to sign up as a real estate broker.
Exactly. I mean, that's exactly what it is. It's considered property. So when I sell my house, am I now considered a broker? Like, what does that do to the real estate lobby, you know, which is massive in Washington? Hey, I'm selling property. You've deemed Bitcoin as property. So if I sell my house, I'm technically a broker, just like the broker that has to get a broker's license, you know? So that was the pushback on that. And it fell apart, which was good. We got more news to get to today on the show. I want to talk about, and we're going to talk about the new progressive stimulus plan coming up in a moment. We're going to talk about wage shortages, and you're not going to believe what billionaires just did. That is just jaw-dropping. We'll get to all of that and more here on the show. But first, I want to tell you about our friends at Athletic Greens. So Guys, this is part of my new daily routine, is my Athletic Greens in the morning. Love my Athletic Greens first thing in the morning, or even I've been doing it for lunches too. It's a comprehensive formula that basically helps adapt to you as your daily needs change due to stress. Maybe you're just not getting enough sleep, right? Or you need your diet just has not been good. Well, that's where Athletic Greens comes in, because it works for any of those areas that you're struggling with. It's easily digestible, 75 highly absorbable vitamins and ingredients right in one scoop. So I love this. So they send you the really nice Ultimate Daily bag. You store it in your refrigerator inside this really nice ceramic. See, there it is. Look at that. So they send you this like ceramic holder with a nice lid and a nice ceramic scoop and your bottle. You put one scoop inside the container. You put some nice cold water in it, up to about 12 ounces. You shake it up, and it's delicious. It's delicious. And I used to take so many supplements every day, like 6 different bottles, and now I can get rid of all of that in favor of just one scoop of Athletic Greens. It's life-changing. It really is. I feel so much better about it. It gives me such great energy. If you've got a busy schedule, if you're just getting poor sleep, you're just not getting the right exercise, the environment stress, or you're not eating enough of the right foods. I mean, it's got broccoli in here. I mean, it's got barley. It's got all kinds of delicious ingredients to make sure you're getting healthy lifestyle. It's a life-changing nutritional habit. It's a superfood, and I'm really obsessed with it. And I would not be, if it didn't taste good, I'd say, nope, you're not a sponsor of our show. But it tastes delicious, and I actually look forward to having it.
And what is the U.S. price there for the subscription? Because I think is that euros that it's showing? I can't see it. See.
Oh, yeah. I think so. That's the European dollar amount on the screen there. So just got to go to the website. Go to the website. Go to athleticgreens.com/invest. Go to that link, and then you can see the plans for you. You'll get a free one-year supply of vitamin D plus 5 free travel packs as well. When you go to our link there, again, athleticgreens.com/invest, and join health experts, athletes, and health-conscious go-getters around the world who make a daily commitment to their health. Again, athleticgreens.com/invest. Get your free year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs. Huge fan of them. So thank you guys for supporting the show and getting a little extra. Oh, Becky says, I love my greens. Yeah, Yvonne says, I take a ton of supplements. Yvonne, I guarantee you, if you look at this, you probably throw out all of those supplements, Yvonne, and in favor of just one of these, one scoop of this every day. Plus, you're getting water, too, when you're taking it. You know, you're getting like the water and the greens, and you shake it up, and it's like, I have it for lunch, and then I've been that's how I've been losing some weight, too, during lunch. I've not been eating like I have. Unhealthy lunch. I eat some Athletic Greens for lunch, and that's my lunch. And I feel full, and it feels delicious. All right, on to more news this morning. Let's talk about this progressive stimulus. So Representative Ilhan Omar, along with other progressive Democratic lawmakers, proposing legislation that would dole out regular stimulus checks or guaranteed income through monthly payments up to $1,200 for adults, $600 for children. And she says, look, poverty is a choice. It's time we prioritize new economic indicators and economic policies that will prioritize sustainable and equitable growth. Today, we're introducing two bills, a guaranteed income bill and a bill to establish an alternative economic metric. She says, you know, we want to send unconditional payments to people who are over and helping overcome resistances to triumph. Support. It's called the Support Act. And the Genuine Progress Indicator, GPI. So instead of using like GDP calculations, right, gross domestic product, we're going to provide an alternative metric to supplement GDP calculations and revamp our economic policy lenses by including overlooked socioeconomic and environmental costs. Interesting, right? Imagine actually looking at things that are important to our economy, because these things are always out of whack, right? When we talk about jobs numbers, when we talk about Wall Street doing so well, we don't include the very things that she's talking about here. Socioeconomic and environmental costs.
Well, that the one part that's confusing, though, is like poverty is a choice. Like, what is she saying there? Is that she means poverty is a choice for the government not to provide or what? Because people were thrust into poverty during the pandemic. They're born into poverty. Like, there's a bunch of poverty that exists that is no choice of anyone's.
Well, I think what she's saying is something similar to what Robert, and I don't want to put words in her mouth, but what she's saying is something similar to what Robert Reich has said, which is that poverty is political, right? It's a political choice. And governments have a choice. You can
She's basically saying the government has made a choice to keep people in poverty.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's a choice for these governments. Like, you mean to tell me the richest country in the world can pay $2 trillion in Afghanistan, build up an entire country, pay all of the salaries for all of the members of their military, over 300,000 salaries for their military, build roads, build embassies, build fortresses, all of that, runways, airports, everything. And we can't.
And remember the pictures from Iraq where they were literally dropping pallets of cash. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking cash, like bricks of cash on pallets in these places. Could you imagine if you took those to impoverished cities and just dropped a pallet of money there to help people? Like, we'll do that over there, but over here, like, we can't get any of this money. We're supporting Afghanistan, Iraq, all these other places, and we can't get anything here.
Yeah, imagine you hear like a cargo plane coming. Like, here it comes. Like, and pallets just pop out on air, you know, on with parachutes of money to help people. You know, by the way, that was exactly what the Third Reich tried to do to the United States. That was their plan, was to, that's the printing presses that they started in 1944. They started it too late. If they actually would have carried that out, where they were just going to drop U.S. dollars over the entire country to destroy our economy, it would have worked. But to do it strategically, where you're actually helping people who need it, instead of just dumping money in Afghanistan and Iraq, imagine that. So what she wants to do in this plan is up to $1,200 for adults, $600 for children. These would be monthly payments, okay? The program, if the legislation were to pass, would not immediately begin. It would be sending out $1,200 checks to most Americans. Instead, it would create a $2.5 billion grant program to fund pilot guaranteed income programs across the country. And the programs would be studied from 2023 to 2027, and then a national program would begin in 2028. But she says, you know, like right now, like with the way that we're running things, we're actually giving less money to the American people. If you take out the child tax credit piece of this, the child tax credit, which just went into effect, which is, I think transformative, and that's Biden, and they should get credit for that, absolutely, because I think it is a poverty reducer, significant poverty reducer. But she says, overall, the amount of money that we're actually giving out to Americans right now is less than what President Trump was giving out under the Trump administration.
We obviously are now ultimately sending money to less people than the Trump administration and the, you know, Senate majority Republicans were willing to. There are going to be about 17 million people who will get less money. This is not the promise that we made. This is not what we are given the opportunity to be in the majority in the Senate and have the White House. And so ultimately, it is, you know, a failure when we compromise ourselves out of delivering on behalf of the American people and keeping our promises.
Look, by the way, at her face, Breonna Keeler at CNN. She's like, you can't say that. Like, this is CNN. You can't say that, like, Democrats have been a failure. Like, look at that face. It's like, no.
Wonder what they're saying in her ear right now.
Change the subject. Democrats are amazing. Biden is amazing. Change the subject. Change the subject. Change the subject over at CNN.
You're cracking me up.
Thanks, Brian. But that's what, you know, that's the mainstream media for you. But she's right. She's right. So her legislation would provide $1,200 per month to people making less than $75,000 or less per year. The heads of households with an income up to $112,500 would receive $1,200 under this program, and $600 would be provided for each minor child. We'll see. You know, we'll see whether or not, like, what members of Congress will do here. So Jen Psaki was asked about this, and she said, we'll see. We'll see what members of Congress propose. That's like a fairly toothless statement. Like, What does Biden propose? Well, we'll see what members of Congress propose. But, you know, and she went on to say, you know, but we these plans, these stimulus packages are generally costly to the federal government. That's what she said.
I will say this. Catholics and Mormons are going to be rich.
Right. Yeah, maybe the Amish, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
if they partake in the system. But yeah, yeah. Like it's like
load them up.
You're going to start a black market of just people having babies. Whoa, we can make, let's see. Yeah, if we do this, let's have three more kids and then we can get that house we wanted in Barbados.
Meanwhile, hundreds of thousands of Americans have signed that petition calling for $2,000 monthly stimulus checks, you know, demanding Congress to take action on this. $2,000 a month. I mean, $2,000 a month as this Delta variant surges. And, you know, there are concerns now about schools reopening in the fall. And, you know, is this going to be the new normal? Is this what we're going to be we're just going to be living with this virus. And if that means that people are restricted and they're not able to work, things are going to be closed. We need to be able to step in and help people. We absolutely need to be able to step in and help people. The richest country in the world and our government is garbage when it comes to helping people, without a doubt. We have, it just makes me sick to think about the people that are working sort of on the front lines, you know, in like food service, you know, like just at restaurants and so forth. And these are the people that are, you know, these are the people making no money. They're working multiple jobs just to get by. And I don't know. It's just heartbreaking to me. And we're going to get to a story just in a few minutes about these billionaires and how much money they're making. They continue just to rake in the money. And it's, you know, while these people just cannot even provide for their families, or they've had hours cut, or they're being asked to work like two shifts because they don't have the employees at the job and they're worried about losing their job, right? So they're working at Subway and they're being asked to work even additional hours because they don't have additional employees who want to work at this crappy job.
Well, and just think, these big companies, like just think how profitable the board members and stuff could be. They could still have their mansions, they could still have their yachts, but do they have to have, you know, the ability to go buy islands, you know, and all this other stuff? Like there's such a divide. Like I don't argue for a minimum wage. I argue for like a maximum, like a corporation should be able to take a certain percent of profit and then dole the rest of it down to the people, because this whole system incentivizes them to keep as much profit as they can and pay their employees as little as possible, because it's all about that, you know, we got to get on the news as this progressive company that's just making all this money. Like look at how famous Bezos is, because he was close to being the first trillionaire or something like that, and he's praised as this great person that's done all this and achieved all this stuff. And some of his employees are, you know, they're making minimum wage or $15 an hour, which I still argue in a company that size isn't anything. It's like he should be paying those people like $80,000-$100,000 a year, every employee, and he'd still be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Which brings me to my next story. Might as well even go there, you know, because it really falls on that exact same story. You know, if you've been watching mainstream media, first of all, shame on you. Shame on you. You know what they do. They lie to you.
You're cracking me up.
Thank you, Brian. But second of all, you've probably seen these million-dollar news anchors on these billion-dollar news networks harping on recently about how America has a labor shortage, right? Right? We've been hearing this story, like the companies can't find workers anywhere. Well, what they're not telling you is that America doesn't have a labor shortage. It has a massive wage shortage. And nowhere is that more apparent than in the service sector, right? In the hospitality sectors, where employees are always paid low salaries and they're forced to work very long hours. Take the story we covered this morning in our newsletter. By the way, we have a daily newsletter, which kicks ass, by the way. Go to morninginvest.com and sign up for it. It's totally free. But one of the stories we covered in there is about Nabisco's parent company, Mondelez. Mondelez. Here it is. Mondelez. Mondelez International. You know, they make Oreos and all manner of processed garbage that's subsidized by the U.S. government, right? Workers there are on strike right now, if you can imagine that, because they want better working conditions. So the strike began in Oregon last week, but has now spread to Colorado and Virginia. And workers there are protesting a change to the current pay scheme that's been rolling out. And Mondelez wants to get rid of the current premium pay system, which guarantees time and a half for any employee working more than 8 hours at a time. Let me just repeat that. They want to get rid of the current premium pay system, which guarantees time and a half for any employee that has to work more than 8 hours at a time. Instead, employees will be paid straight time. Straight time. Until they reach 40 hours in a week. So it's possible, if you think about it, where they literally would not get any time off to even like take a nap. They would work back-to-back shifts, right? And they wouldn't get time and a half because guess what? They hadn't yet reached the 40 hours in a week minimum to make overtime.
Oh, so they're basically going to implement the Frito-Lay model worldwide or nationwide?
This is, again, folks, why we need to boycott these crappy companies. We need to boycott. First of all, we should be boycotting Frito-Lays for treating their employees like they do, right? And first of all, we should boycott Frito-Lay because they make processed food, okay, that is making us fat and killing us. Okay, that's number one. Number two, we should boycott Frito-Lay because they treat their workers like crap. Number two. So if you've got Lay's potato chips in your house, well, you know, throw them out. Or any of the crap that these companies make. It's awful for us. And it's all subsidized by the federal government, by the way. Anything with these high fructose corn syrup and all of this other garbage is all subsidized by the federal government. Throw it out. It's making us fat. It's making us unhealthy. It's making us addicted. If you got Oreos in the house, I'm sorry. Sorry to break it to you. Throw them out. You know, Nabisco crackers, all of that stuff. This is how they treat their employees. We should stand up with our wallets and say, screw you. Screw you. I'm going to make some cookies at home if I need cookies. I'm going to make it myself from scratch. Screw you. So they say it's going to be cheaper for the company. It's going to be cheaper for the company. That's how it's going to unfold. Workers oppose this because they say it's going to be basically cheaper for the company to now impose longer work days. So you can work 12-hour shifts, not get time and a half, and you won't be paid more now that you're on your feet for 4 hours beyond the 8 hours that you were supposed to be. Here's what the factory workers have to say about it.
People can be forced to working up to 60, 70 days. I've personally worked 45 days in a row without a day off.
We want to be treated like we're people instead of like slaves.
The company has never given us anything, but corporate greed is taking everything away. And we'll be out here until we can stop corporate greed.
I'll tell you what, though, if I'm just being honest, if they just made me in charge of the filling of Oreo cookies, I'd work for that.
You'd just be like,
I'd just be sitting there eating that filling. Yeah.
Like, yeah. I mean, the same thing for me with like Easy Cheese. Like, just pay me with your. Just
Do you
pay
actually
me with,
like that stuff?
Pay me with Easy Cheese. I used to eat
please
that
tell
crap.
Me you don't eat the jalapeno.
I used
version.
To eat that crap as a kid, man. Oh, man.
Yeah, as a kid, I did too. Squeeze it out of the thing.
Awful.
Oh, man.
And the Easy Cheese would get that little hard cheese at the end, you know, if you didn't yeah. eat it for a few, you'd have to pop that little piece of hard cheese off. It wasn't even cheese. Let's be honest. It wasn't cheese in an aerosolized form. Like, that's, we wonder why we're the fattest country in the world. Because we're, you know, and by the way, the company, I mean, get this. This company also wants to offer cheaper health insurance to new hired people. And the union opposes this too. So they want to offer cheaper health insurance to the new people they're hiring. Way to reward the new people you're bringing in, right?
That's like when you call Comcast and you're a new customer. You're like an old customer. You're paying $100 a month, and they're like, "Oh, we got a new special for new people that's $70 a month." Well, can I get that? Well, no, you're an existing customer. Sorry.
Yeah, you're an. Sorry about that. Oh man. So the union and the parent company are right now like at loggerheads at, you know, what are they going to do here when factories have already moved south? They're going to Mexico, right? Because they can go to Mexico and then they can, you know, pay them. They can do terrible things to them there and without the kind of labor laws that we even have in the United States, which are pretty paltry to begin with. Man, these companies, they do so well. And they lobby Congress. Well, you know, they move their headquarters to Mexico and Latin America. And then they funnel money to these congressmen to make sure that these workers don't get any satisfaction or any better working hours. It's awful.
Well, and I think that you really have to look at the core and try to fix the core. Because I don't think taxing them is the answer either. I don't think that taxing the rich is the answer or taxing these big corporations. Because all that's going to do is put more money into the hands of our government that mismanages our money. Like, that's more money that they can transfer to their buddies. Like, we know we're not going to get it. We're not going to benefit from that money. So the structure of a corporations in general needs to change, you know, like a maximum wage or a maximum percentage that they can claim as profits. And then the rest has to trickle down. Or I know trickle down is a word that nobody likes because of trickle down economics, but like something that doesn't allow these companies and these people to make so much damn money. There doesn't need to be that big of a divide. If you look at European places, they don't have that. They don't have that divide with their CEOs and all that other stuff like they do here, unless it's a US-based company overseas.
Right. Yeah. I mean, in side note, the company is valued at $89 billion. So... This company, and look how well it's done under the pandemic. You know, this is the company that's refusing to pay people time and a half at a time when they're $89 billion in market cap and nice profits year over year.
Think about the division. Like, think about, like, if you were the CEO of that company, all right, and you're making your, you know, $500 million a year, whatever the heck it is you're making. Could you like walk the floor of your own plant and face those people, that the people that are there working 12 hours, they can barely stand up, they can't even pay their bills? Like, could you look them in the eye? No. Like, how could you, why would you want to run a company like that? Why would you want a company where your workers are struggling to survive while you're living high on a hog? Like, how could you live with yourself?
Well, it's like the movie, it's like Mr. Mom. Do you ever remember the movie?
And, hell yeah.
You know,
221, whatever it takes.
Yeah, when they're standing up in the office, the executive office at the car manufacturer, you know, and they're up in the windows and like looking down at the workers, and the workers are like scowling up at them, you know, and they're up there like terrified of these workers, you know? Because yeah, there's this incredible divide.
Oh my gosh.
Between the top and the bottom.
I have a solution. What we need to do is there needs to be a national every year. It's like Bring Your Daughter to Work Day. It's like Trading Places Day, where the executives go work in the factories and the workers get to go up into the executive area and make decisions.
Like, what is it? Billionaire Boss? What is that show?
I think it is
Billionaire. Yeah. Hidden Boss or Undercover Boss? Undercover Boss. Yeah, where you're like, they're literally the guy. I remember watching the one where he had to work on his waste management company. He had to go and actually work on the trash trucks.
I saw that one. Yeah, I saw that one.
And
could you imagine like the level of respect they would have if they just had to go out there and do what they do for one day, the whole 12 hours? They got to stand there and they got to do that job for 12 hours just like they would, and then be like, you know what? Me as an executive, if I did a speech at Goldman Sachs, I'd get paid $100,000. But I'll tell you what, making what I would have made to stand there for 12 hours and put that thing together, I wouldn't do that for $200,000. Like, they just have no idea what those people are actually doing because they're so far divided. They're out on their yachts. They're up in their office. So, you know, we need somehow to pull them down, put them in there so that they understand what's going on. Because right now, they don't care.
But that's capitalism. It's not going to happen in the United States. You know, sadly, that's our system. That's our system. The profits can just be unbelievably enormous at the expense of the workers. And that's the United States right now. You know, that's why.
When you say a market economy in like Denmark and all that other stuff. So, I mean, isn't that a version of capitalism? It's just a far better version of capitalism because it's more contained. Like, what is that when you say market economy?
You know, a market economy is when you have like the decisions about investment in a country, when you have this decisions about production and distribution, they're all basically guided by what the economy is saying, the supply and demand. And so, you know, basically, you can't have runaway wealth. You can't have like this complete separation between the have and the have-nots. And so when you walk around in Norway and other countries, you don't see people like lavishly laying around in big, you know, massive yachts like we have, like what you see like Jeff Bezos and these others doing it. This massive separation between the CEOs of companies and the workers at the bottom level. Like, they hang out together, right? There's not a huge disparity. And yes, Europe does have a class system, right? Europe probably is the most ancient of all, you know, class systems, right? So, but that's the point, is they've managed to, within the workforce, and have an economy that actually helps its people. Imagine that. And provide for its people. And a social safety net so that there aren't, you don't see these this massive separation between the wealthiest and the poorest people like we have in the United States. It's just awful.
And think if somebody was to stand there for 12 hours and do that job, if they did that and they were appreciated, they were taken care of, they had benefits, they didn't have to go home and figure out how they were going to pay for food that day because they've already spent their whole month's check on rent and everything else. Imagine those people would, and you would just say, hey, come work as long as you can and or whatever. They'd probably work 12 hours. If they were happy, they were having a good time, they had breaks, they could, you know, stop whenever they wanted, go grab something to eat, come back. You know, if you just keep them happy and take care of them like Dan Price, they would move mountains for you.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, in a market economy, you know, in many ways, it can be really, really regulated or it can be very openly and not regulated. And, you know, it all you have in these market economies, you have the government, the public sector basically saying, no, we're going to provide a social safety net. And so we're going to regulate to the point where we're going to make sure that people are taken care of. Where in the United States, we have a capitalist system, which we have a corporatocracy, where corporations just run the show in the United States. That's it. That's it. Corporations run the show in the United States. And you better do the bidding of these big corporations and the military-industrial complex. That's it. Like, look at this company. Nabisco's parent company, Mondelez, made $3.5 billion in profit in 2020. Jeez. And yet they can't pay their workers. Overtime pay? Time and a half?
Well, and that's my argument, too. You're talking like this is a corporatocracy, like you said, and the corporations pay our, you know, officials in order to pass legislation. Well, basically, if they tax them more, they'd be doing the same thing. So either way, the government would be getting that money, whether they tax it and it comes through the IRS or they just funnel it in through lobbyists. The government is getting that, and we know how great they are with our money. Like, they're just so good with our money. So that's why when people say we should tax these corporations, I tend to not agree unless there was a system in place to capture that money and actually put it to our benefit.
Yeah, and I think, you know, to your point, you know, when we talk about a market economy like in Norway, you know, that's where the government can step in and set price ceilings on things and say, no. You're not going to charge $700 for an inhaler for someone who has asthma. No.
Yeah. And in a like capitalist... That, what was that company that did that with that life-saving drug that was like $5,000 or something, that dude that manipulated that?
Yeah, Martin Shkreli, little punk. Pharma bro, Martin Shkreli. I mean, yeah, exactly. And in a capitalist society, the private sector owns the entire price. They can set the price however they want, you know? Absolutely. I mean, whatever they want.
You don't have to look any further than our hospital system, our whole medical system and insurance system to know that we just completely take advantage of people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And the other thing is, too, they can also set price floors and price ceilings. So they can say, no, you can't make $2.18 an hour as a waiter. Come on. Like, this is not going to happen in Norway. Sorry, it's not going to happen. And so there's the difference. Right. Yes, businesses are able to flourish and do well, right? But they're also not able to hurt people. They're not able. They have the ability to do so. And yes, government and businesses still do that. No one's perfect, but they do not have the unfettered access to just step on people like we do in the United States.
You know what I would love to do? I would love to go to those other countries and just go to some American-based franchises like a McDonald's, Burger King, Taco Bell, and stuff like that, and interview the workers that work there and then interview the workers that work here and just see what the difference is in the attitude of working in a fast food restaurant that we consider low level here and see what their attitudes are. I bet you they're night and day different.
Yeah, and the workers themselves, you know, I mean, I just say, like, I go to a McDonald's in Europe, right? Go to a McDonald's or a Burger King in Portugal, for instance, right? And the people in these restaurants, they're incredibly nice. They're happy to be there, so it seems. They're, you know, joking with each other. They're very kind. They're, you know, bringing food out. They're coming back, can I get you anything else? It's a very, you know, it's a job that they actually get paid well to do. And in the United States, like, next. I can't tell you how many times I've gone up to the counter at a McDonald's in the United States where the person's just standing there. I did this at Chicago Airport. on a flight recently, and it was the woman was just standing like this looking at me.
I'll never forget. This wasn't too long ago. I very rarely have cash, but I had to pay with cash at this place. And the person, because the register didn't like show her how much change, she could not in her head comprehend the amount. And I was trying to tell her how much it was, and she just could not comprehend the amount of change that she had to give me. Like, she could not do that math in her head. You know, like, it's like any job that I've had, whether I liked it or not, I gave 110%. Like, I owned that job because I took it. I took mm-hmm. that job. So I'm going to do the best that I can do. And that's how I've always like elevated to management positions usually, or at least group leader positions, because I always just worked my ass off. And I feel like a lot of people, if you're not getting paid well, because I was paid well for the jobs that I did, but even if I wasn't, I would have worked my butt off. But like, people just in this country don't seem to get that. But I can understand, because also they're not getting paid a good wage.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and they're miserable to be there. They're like, that's the thing. It's like, I worked my butt off when I worked at McDonald's, you know, and I was always gracious to any customer that I came in. But there are people who are just like, I get no money. You treat me like crap. I just got yelled at by the boss. You know, that boss is also making no money, you know. Anyway, big differences between the United States and the rest of the world. That's for sure.
Yeah. And I'm not ripping on people that can't count change, because I'm not that good at math either. But this was simple, and I was actually arguing over her because I was showing her the amount and trying to explain it to her, and she wasn't agreeing and didn't get it. So that's all I'm talking about.
We've got more news to get to here in the show. I want to talk about billionaires in just a moment. But first, and what's happening to Gen X is actually really, really troubling. But first, I want to tell you about our friends at Scoremaster. A lot of people struggling right now with their credit score. Did you know the average American has 97 points they could add to their credit score, but they have no idea how to get them? The data scientists over at Scoremaster crack the code on how to do it. You can add 97 points to your credit score. It's like getting found money. You can enroll in 1 minute and get your points fast and get better deals, right? Whether it's leasing a new car, applying for a credit card, and anything like that. You're refinancing your home, because all of those things matter. You know, how fast is Scoremaster? One member raised his credit score 33 points in just 5 days, another 43 points in a couple of weeks. Scoremaster is so easy, it takes about a minute to get started. And if you hurry, you can get to try Scoremaster for free. That's right, try Scoremaster free. See how many plus points you can add to your credit score. Go to scoremaster.com/invest. That's scoremaster.com/invest. Again, scoremaster.com/invest. So our thanks to Scoremaster for their support of the show. So at a time when we're talking about billionaires in this world, and we're thinking, my gosh, they just continue to run roughshod over their employees. They continue to rake in obscene amounts of money at a time when they're trying to clamp down and not allow their workers to unionize, extend, you know, get extra money for working on the front lines during a pandemic, making sure that they don't have to be on their feet for 16 hours straight and not be paid accordingly. We now have this new report out this morning, which just is unbelievable. Global billionaires see $5.5 trillion in pandemic wealth surge.
Oh, good for them. You know, like they had it so rough. I mean, good for them.
Exactly. I am so happy that they finally have been able to get on their feet. You know, that I think they've been really down and out for a while.
Wait a minute. You know, what's also funny is the CARES Act, we transferred $5 trillion to them as well. So shouldn't that technically be 10? Well, I guess some of the money didn't go to billionaires. It went to big corporations, but
yeah. Not all of it went to them, exactly, but yeah. Enough of the CARES Act went to them. Global billionaires see $5.5 trillion pandemic wealth surge. The world's billionaires have seen their wealth surge by $5.5 trillion since the beginning of the pandemic in March 2020, a gain of over 68%. Did you know that the world has 2,690 global billionaires? Their combined wealth rose from $8 trillion up to $13.5 trillion as of just a few weeks ago. Global billionaire total wealth has increased more than more over the past 17 months of the pandemic than it did in the 15 years prior to the pandemic. Amazon's Jeff Bezos' wealth increased by $79.4 billion during the pandemic. And here's a guy who has the audacity to stand in the way of his workers unionizing in Alabama and other places where they continue to have to pee in bottles, where they are fired using an iPhone app rather than have human interaction, where they are quoted at how many packages they can deliver in a certain amount of time, and if they take a pee break or stop, they will be dinged, and that will go against their score, and then they might likely be fired via an app because they haven't been able to produce via their quota.
So what you're saying is only Android users work there now? Because
right.
The app's not available on Android yet.
Wouldn't that be funny? Like, it's the app they make, they don't work on all the phones. No, it works on every phone. You could be fired on an Android phone just as soon as you could be fired on an iPhone. So his wealth increased $79 billion during the pandemic, up from $113 billion in March. Now he's up to $192 billion. He could become, honestly, he could become the first trillionaire. Probably will in the next 6 years.
I thought he already had at one point. Don't you remember that? Don't you remember saying Jeff Bezos became the first? Like, I just remember a story about that, but I don't know if I'm on an alternative reality or what.
Well, I mean, the company, you know, is a trillion, but he personally, his personal wealth, he's at $192 billion now. Just a few more, you know, just a few more years, and he'll be the first trillionaire. An estimated 325 new billionaires joined the 3-comma club since the pandemic began.
Well, let's just hope once he's a trillionaire that he pays for his own rockets. You know what I mean?
Well, that brings me to that
point. Because I'm tired of paying for it, honestly. I'm tired of paying for his rockets, if I'm being honest.
Well, you know what he did, right? So he filed a lawsuit this week. He filed a lawsuit against NASA because NASA awarded the lunar lander to Elon Musk's company, SpaceX. So he's upset about the new rover being awarded to SpaceX, and he didn't get that contract. So he's suing NASA. Now, bear in mind, here's a guy who pays zero in taxes, who also was lined up for billions of dollars in tax incentives for him to launch his big flying, penis-shaped rocket, where he could go up and spit into space for 4 minutes and throw ping pong balls back and forth with a buddy, right? So the taxpayers foot the bill for him to have this rocket project. He pays $0 in taxes, and then he has the balls to sue the federal government because he didn't get a contract and Elon Musk got the contract. And he now is sitting on $192
billion.
$192 billion. And crying about it.
I wanted that contract.
Nothing makes sense.
Exactly, Judge. Like I've been saying for a long time. I have to say, she always makes a lot of sense, right? She always nails it. Judge Jeanine always gets it right.
I put that dildo in space, and you people helped me pay for it so that I could land these big contracts to show that I'm a powerhouse in the space industry. And you're going to give it to Elon Musk? How dare you?
How dare you?
How dare you?
Nothing makes sense.
Yes. Governments have in the past turned to the wealthiest in response to major crises after World Wars I and II. One-off wealth taxes were levied on European countries and Japan to fund reconstruction. France, for example, taxed excessive wartime wealth gains at a rate of 100%. During war. Like, so all these people that made profit off of war, France was like, not going to happen. Remember, we were invaded by the Nazis. Remember, we were taken over by the Nazis. You made massive profits during the war? How about we tax this at 100% in order to, for the betterment of the country? You did really darn well. Why don't we tax that so that we can rebuild our country? But no, we can't tax the wealthy right now during a pandemic. We can't do it. Joe Manchin and others and Republicans certainly don't want to do it when wealth is off the charts for these companies and billionaires. how are we going to pay for it? How are we going to do it? I don't know how we're going to do it. I got an idea. Follow what other countries have done. More recently, following the global financial crisis in 2008, countries including Iceland introduced temporary wealth taxes to help refill public coffers.
Imagine. Is there any way that if we do this, we could get, can we get a third party to manage the money? Where's the Treasury? Like, where's the Treasury these days? How come we never hear the Treasury anymore? Like, are they not in charge of the dollar at all anymore? Like, what? Like, who could we trust to give it, to manage this money, so that if they did tax the rich and these wealthy corporations, that it would at least go to infrastructure and not to back into their own hands?
Don't give it to the United States Treasury. I mean, don't give it to Janet Yellen and these guys. You know, give it to the give it to the International Monetary Fund. Give it to the IMF. There's a solution. Give it to the IMF. Yeah, see if they can.
IMF is the one that's like has all these centralized banks all over the world, and why all these countries are emboldened to us, or not.
Who should we give it to? Beholden to.
Let's give it to
the World Bank. What about the World Bank? What about the UN?
What about E.F. Hutton? I think E.F. Hutton could probably do something, because when that guy talks, you know what I mean.
Yeah. What about Warren Buffett? Give it to Warren Buffett.
Yeah, let's give it to somebody responsible, because if we just give the government more money, that doesn't help us at all. Like, none of it. We already see that the money that we give them only goes to war. So think about the war budget we would give them if they taxed all these wealthy corporations. They'd be like, the war budget doesn't matter anymore, you guys. We just got all this money from Bezos and all these big companies. Guess what? We're going to launch new jets. Let's buy some more nuclear weapons. What, how many billions can we just like throw at this to make sure that people don't get a dime?
Yeah, I agree. You know, policymakers, we have leading economists, you have, you know, civil society organizations, you have the UN, you have the IMF, you have the World Bank. They're all basically calling right now for like solidarity taxes and longer term wealth taxes. So all of these, the UN, the IMF, and the World Bank, they're all saying solidarity taxes. All of these trillionaires, basically, let's tax them. Stand in solidarity. How many yachts do you need? Newsflash, none. None. Like, the yacht that I own, I never hardly use it. You know, I can't even keep all the caviar stocked fresh. You know, it's just more of a headache for me. And Captain Steubing, who runs the thing, like, you know, like, he's always like, where are we going, Captain Clayton? Like, you know, I don't know. I got to work.
Even on a state level side, right? Or city level. Let's say city level side, city level government. If city level government, like, let's say Seattle, for instance, where you've got this huge homeless population and a really crazy, like, stuff going on with the homeless and all that. If you have companies like Microsoft, Amazon, you take a huge portion of their profits and put it towards that in a local level. Take it at the local level. Don't give it to the federal government. You know, make them, because the homelessness could be wiped out with those two corporations alone in every city in Washington. You know, right. If you did it on the state level.
Yeah, imagine using money from the super rich to like mitigate homelessness, right? To think about, or even just the economic impacts of the pandemic, not even just like homelessness, just, you know, hunger, food insecurity. Imagine just taxing them a little bit. What it could eradicate homelessness and hunger in the United States.
Yeah. You want to do something progressive? Make a rail line that goes from Facebook to Google to Amazon to, you know what I mean? Like, all these companies, make something that actually benefits people. You fix the roads to get people to your job. You fix the things that people need to work for you. You provide the housing that they need to be happy to live, to come work for you and make you all this money.
Not going to happen. Sadly.
Not going to happen.
But hey, in Argentina, here's what happened. They approved a one-off special levy dubbed the millionaire tax. It's brought in around $2.4 billion to pay for pandemic recovery. They taxed the millionaires to help out. You know, they've been, wow, you guys made a $5.5 trillion during this pandemic. That seems out of whack. That seems out of whack with what's going on in the rest of the world right now and these countries. Maybe you guys can step up and help out instead of, you know, launching yourselves into space at a time when people don't even have homes. Maybe you postpone that flight. I don't know. Like, just Just my take. Let me know your thoughts in the comments below. Love to hear that.
How about this, Clayton? Let's you and I manage the money.
Okay.
I mean, I know how to balance a checkbook. I'm pretty good. I keep it all in my head. I do pretty well with my own finances. I know that would be at a higher level, but I think we could probably do better than the government.
I think so.
I think we would definitely end every war. I think that we wouldn't be putting any money toward that. We would have a strong defense. We would build a nice defense here at home. And then we would invest the rest into infrastructure and the people.
I think that sounds great.
It's simple.
I think that sounds great. Yeah. There would not be, we would be able to tick these billionaires off like the list, you know, instead of adding 100 billionaires to the list every year under our regime, we'd be losing billionaires every year. And we would be losing homelessness and poverty, and we would start to get more like this, more homogenized. You know,
I try to be a very positive person. I really do, in spite of what you guys hear me say on the show every day. But the thing is, I don't want to give these people credit when they come out and they say, you know, we're going to help 50% of the impoverished kids in this country. Because in my mind, I see them standing there with enough food to feed this entire country. And they're picking 50% of the kids and saying, we're going to help you. Well, what are you going to do with the rest of that food? Well, you know, some of it's going to go to waste. Some of it, we don't know. I know we've got plenty to help you all, but we're only going to help half of you because if we help all of you, nobody's going to respect us. You know, you're going to like be dependent on us and everything. And you're going to get like, you know, I mean, the Republicans are thinking you're going to want to live off of us the rest of your lives, from cradle to grave. And we just can't have that. It's like it right. never goes far enough. Ever, ever, ever does it go far enough. And I don't like giving them credit for saving 50% of kids when they could save 100.
Right. Yeah. So 2 years of free college. Like, we can't give you the full 4 years of college in the United States and under this plan. We're going to give you 2 years. Okay.
And so in like my mind, that is a major investment in infrastructure.
Yes, it is. You know, no wonder we keep falling behind the rest of the world. So Donald Ford says, so you're in favor of government theft as long as they're stealing from the rich. No, Donald. A tax. That's not theft. You're taxing this wealth. And by the way, when I talk about theft, think about all of these companies that are paying zero in taxes. Zero, right? Or these tax cheats that are hiding money offshore and they're going through all sorts of hoops and hurdles to hide this money. And the estimates are we could bring in over $1 trillion. $1 trillion at the IRS level if we would actually fund them appropriately so they could actually go after these tax cheats. On top of which, there's 35 million Americans who have paid their for their tax refunds and they're backlogged and sitting on a desk somewhere.
You know, I would not care if they paid zero in taxes and they got every incentive in the world as long as they took care of people. The problem that I have is not the fact that they're making the money that they're making. It's that it's the people that are making what they're making. That's the problem. If they took care of people, which they could, like look at Dan Price. If they all took care of people like he did, and it was more where they were only 4% or 8% away from us rather than like 800% or whatever it is, then that's one thing. You know, I think that if capitalism worked that way, that would be fine. But what ends up happening every single time is these people get ultra rich while their workers stay ultra poor. And it keeps them in a place where they have to work because they have to survive. Whereas you could create an environment where they want to work. And they can survive. And so that's the problem that I have.
Right. I mean, look at the employee at a Starbucks. I mean, most of the Starbucks I go to, I remember Megan. She was the store manager at the Starbucks where I used to live in Florham Park, New Jersey. And she was, hey, Clayton. Like, I would come in. She got to know me. She would ask my name. She's like, oh, yeah, your drink is right over there. You know, and I would get this one pressed coffee or whatever. The other employees were, like, super happy. They were getting health benefits. They were getting paid well. They weren't, you know, being like, oh, you don't get paid because you worked a longer shift, so you don't get paid time and a half because we asked you. No, they were actually treated well. And I remember his name, Dan, who worked there. We would talk about tech stuff all the time. And we were talking about, you know, new iPhone that just came out of this and that. And we were always engaged in conversation. He was such a pleasant person. And then you go to these other service in places where the employees hate life because they hate being treated like crap. They are treated like crap. They're paid like crap. No wonder they're miserable and they don't want to be there. So I don't I don't put it past a person who's 19 years old who works at a McDonald's who's like, next. You know, they're treated like the dredge of society, sadly. End up having to work three jobs.
Look at the thinking, like Dan Price, like they think that that person just has a bad attitude. You know what? You've just got a really bad attitude. You don't want to be here. You don't show up on time. Like, why don't they ever look back at themselves and think, like, what if you were paying that person enough that they could pay their bills and then have some money left to go do things on the weekend? After work, they don't have to go home and try to figure out, like, how to pick up their kids and how to afford daycare and all that stuff. They could go out after they got off work because they've got money to leave the kid in daycare for a couple hours while they go enjoy life, go walk at a park, go sit down, go have a coffee somewhere, a drink with a friend. But it's like you're putting people in positions where they're on stress level 10 their whole entire existence because they're not getting paid well. They're treated like crap because they have a bad attitude, because they're not being paid well, because their life sucks to them. So make their life not suck and think of like how much that would help your profits, because I, as a customer, don't want to go talk to people that have that attitude. If I go somewhere and people are friendly, guess what? I have a good experience. I'm going back. And I'm going to go back again. I'm going to say, hey, you need to go check out this experience at this place. These people were great. So it's just this big circle and nobody gets it. It's like they don't understand that if the better you treat people, the better you pay people, the happier they're going to be, the happier your customers are going to be because they're going to want to deal with those people. And it's just this big circle.
Yeah, you always want to go back to where you've had a good experience, right? I mean, that's the way we operate. I mean, that's why we go to certain restaurants here, because we love the service, we love the food, we love the atmosphere, we love the experience. Why would you want to go to a place if you get terrible, angry people who are just they don't want to be there? It's just a bad experience. The whole the whole culture of the place is rotten. You don't want to support it. You don't want to be a part of it. You don't want to give money to support it. And that's the way I feel about, you know, these big companies. You know, when I see like a Frito-Lay thing, or I see Nabisco, or I see this crap and they're walking all over their employees, like, I don't want to give these companies money. I don't want to enrich their executive board while these workers are literally on the street begging to be treated like a human being, and they're striking so that they don't have to, you know, they don't have to like work their bones to the core, you know, by standing there for 12 hours when they should be paid time and a half if they have to work an extra couple of hours. I mean, these companies continue to walk all over people, and it's absolutely disgusting.
Well, there was a place in Boston, a bar, and people would walk in there, and they actually knew their name, you know? Like, Norm. I think it was called Cheers or something like that.
I was going to say. I was like, are you thinking?
And those had to be some happy, like, well-paid people, because they were there, like, every hour of every day, and they knew everybody's name. Yeah.
Woody was always there. Carla. Yeah. Although Carla,
think how much they must have paid those people. Yeah, Carla was, but still, she went home. You see her apartment. She had a nice apartment. Like,
yeah,
they were taken care of.
I got one last story I want to get to today. So this story really chaps my behind, and I think this is indicative of what we're seeing in the larger economy right now. This story struck me. It's blown up on Reddit, by the way. This data is really troubling for Gen X workers. So Gen X workers may be facing the biggest unemployment crisis, a new study finds. Gen X workers aged 45 and older, that's really what Generation X is, may be bearing the brunt of a global unemployment crisis as the pandemic adds to existing challenges for older workers, according to a new report. Rapid digital adoption during the pandemic has accelerated the automation of jobs and worsened the underlying ageism, making it harder for mid-career workers to secure roles, according to the report from The Generation, a nonprofit employment organization. This global study, entitled Meeting the World's Mid-Career Challenge, found that between the age of 45 and 60, they face increased barriers due to biases among hiring managers, as well as reluctance among workers to learn new skills. So, pandemic hits. People are in this period right now with like, oh my God, what am I going to do? How am I going to provide for my family? And then hiring managers are like 35 or younger, and they're seeing this 45 or 50-year-old person walking in. They're thinking, this person probably doesn't understand Google Docs. This person probably doesn't understand how to use Discord or Slack or the things that we're going to use here in the company. They're a little too old to be working with us. So this ageism is happening. Also, let's be honest, you can pay younger workers less money. And, you know, these people who are 40, 45, 50 years old expect a certain level of salary that they're used to getting. And now they're not going to get it. And they're going to be paid less as a worker, you know, to be able for them to be able to get younger people in these jobs.
Well, and that's because people at that age have already established a lifestyle. You know, you're at the toward the end of your life. You've already been living a certain way and you can't just like ditch your car and your home or whatever because you got to take this, you know, Walmart greeting position.
Right. Yeah. You know, and this story really stunned me. I mean, it really speaks to this. It's really sad. I mean, when you look at the people that are dealing with this right now, this is what's happening in America. Some people are doubling their salary by secretly working two jobs from home. But so we should reward these people, you know, like George W. Bush wanted to, like when a woman got up and said famously, you know, I work three jobs. And he just stopped what he was doing. He's like, you know, I got to say, that's a deeply American thing right there. Let's give her a round of applause. Like, no, she shouldn't have to work three jobs. You're missing the point.
I can see them spinning that story as they're stealing. They're stealing from another company by not, you know what I mean? Like they're secretly doing. I could see the spin on that story.
Oh, that's exactly how the story is in the Wall Street Journal. Oh, it's
okay.
Oh, they don't work more than 40 hours a week for both jobs combined. They're basically quietly putting in less work at one job and less work at another and working two jobs just to double their salary.
And if they're doing a good job at both, good for them.
Right. So if they're not doing a good job, fire them, I guess, right? But if they're doing a good job and they're having to work another job to make ends meet, okay. But you're missing the larger point here, which is in the United States of America, you shouldn't have to work two jobs just to make ends meet, to double your salary, be treated well. This is crazy. You know, and to kind of go back to this, you know, the story about Gen Xers, I mean, it's like, you know, you have to work the rest of your life because you can't afford to retire. Also, you're too old to work. Sorry. This is not going to end well, Paul says on Reddit. Here's another person on Reddit. This is exactly the crisis we're in for. Generations of people who are not able to accumulate wealth and who are eventually going to be physically unable to work and being without any discernible support when that occurs. This is probably why so many people's retirement plans now include things like going off into a field to freeze to death.
You know, you could do like where it the pay workers pay is based on a percentage. It's on the percentage of profits. And that way, if you go and you work for a startup that's just getting started, they don't have much money, you know that you're not going to make that much money. But over time, that amount would go up as that company becomes more profitable. So there would be an incentive to go work for something like Amazon because you know that you're going to get that percentage of whatever their profits are. And you would work your butt off to stay in that position. You'd do the best you could because you're making that kind of money. And that would kind of make it so that, you know, if somebody was in a position where I don't need to make a lot of money, I'm retired, I can go work for a startup and not make that much money and help them get to where they're making more to bring on different people for that higher percentage or whatever. You know, like that seems to me like that could be a fairer way to make sure that people are getting paid what they're worth. And not because the problem with people with the minimum wage is there are startup companies and companies where they don't have that kind of money to put into employees right away because not everybody gets $250,000. So I might have a position that I can put on Craigslist that, look, I'm just getting started. I can pay like $8 an hour right now. That's all I can afford. But I promise you, as we grow, I'll pay better. You know what I mean?
Or so a stake in the company, you know?
Like yeah, which that's what I'm saying. The percentage would be basically a stake in the company. You're getting a stake in the profits of that company. So in doing that, you're taking ownership. I have ownership in that company, so I want that company to succeed as well. So I'm going to work my butt off as long as I know that there's integrity and stuff with the management. And that would eliminate, you know, you could say, the executives get this percentage, but it's never going to be that much of a difference of the workers. So it's like, okay, your executives can have like 8 to 10%, and then we divvy up like, you know, the rest of the 70% or whatever. We need like, you know, capital to run the business, but then 70% gets divided to all the employees.
Yeah.
Like a profit sharing.
I mean, isn't that what Starbucks basically does? Like giving stock and health benefits? I mean, no wonder you're incentivized. You want to lift up the whole company then, right? Because if the company does better, your stock in Starbucks does better. It lifts the whole boat. Imagine that. Everyone has a buy-in.
A business owner. Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone has a buy-in. They have, you know, and that's where the equity comes in. When you have an equity position, you have a stake in the company, right? And even if you don't have a stock stake in the company, but where you feel like your bosses are actually taking care of you and rewarding you for the hard work, making sure that the salary is there that can actually give you a great way to live, and you notice that boss is also not making 33 times what you're making in salary. Maybe he's making 4 times as much. You know, maybe he started the company so 4 or 5 times as much. I get that. That's what Dan Price's goal was. You know, he was making 33 times what his employees were, and he said, "Nah, I'm cutting my salary, and I'm going to raise all of your salaries. So now I'm only making 4 times as much." Great.
Well, then what I did too is. I paid all my guys the same amount I paid myself by the week. And then I took 40% at the end of the month. 40% went into the bank to stay for capital, for running the business, ads, stuff like that. 60% I paid out in bonuses. And we all got the same bonus. I just divided it up between all of us. You know, could you imagine if something like Amazon did that, they give them dividends or whatever, or gave them some kind of profit sharing at the end of every month? It's like, you know, and it's a certain percentage. Like,
the shareholders would never go for it. That's the thing. Like, you'd have to convince the shareholders, the Wall Street shareholders. That's the problem, right?
It is the problem. But that's the thing. That's what you have to get rid of. You have to get rid of that and make the worker is the shareholder. The worker is the one that benefits from their own work. Like right now, I can go in and I can give 100% and make $500 a week and struggle, or I can go in and give 2% and make $500 a week and struggle. If I'm going to like go in and have to struggle, I'm not going to give 100%. Why would I? I'm going to be miserable. But if I went in there knowing that at the end of the month, I was going to make enough money that I could, like, you know, have somewhat of a lifestyle, not even lavish, like just have a car that I don't have to worry about paying for, a house that I don't have to worry about, be able to go out and eat every night if I wanted to and not have to worry about it, I would work my ass off and be happy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hey, Bezos, you know, when he started Amazon, when he became public, he had to basically convince shareholders that, hey, we're not going to make any money. Like, we're going to basically be breaking even, like, for years. And they had to go along with it. They had to, like, believe in the long-term goal of this. And they did. So these shareholders basically quarter after quarter after quarter had to see that Amazon wasn't really profitable, right? Until it finally was. So maybe we could actually get shareholders to start seeing this differently for public companies. Here's what we're going to do. The same. And by the way, this actually worked with IHOP, or no, with Denny's.
IHOP. I was just going to bring that up. Yeah.
Was it IHOP or Denny's? One of the diner. I think
Denny's.
It was Denny's. It was Denny's. Yeah. And we reported on this a few months ago where, guess what? They actually increased the pay. They provided them benefits and I forget what else. They like, I don't know if they doubled their pay or they did something. It was like, whoa, you're doing what? Whoa, what? And you know, what's amazing is, like, you know, if you're looking at that, you're saying that's, as a shareholder, you're saying that's amazing. Like that she could actually, that these workers at Denny's could actually be making more money and the shareholders. And then those particular Denny's where they tried it in California became way more profitable because the workers had a buy-in. And they became a part of everything there. And they were actually incentivized to do a better job. And the shareholders made more money and the stock
and
why? Rose.
Because the employees were happy, which made it a better experience for the customers. And the customers wanted to go back. Like it is a circle. Like if you have it's like if you walk into a place that has bad vibes, you're not going to want to go back there. Like you just go there and the employees are pouring your coffee and just like, you know, just like having a miserable day. You walk out of that wearing that on your shirt. You're like, oh, gosh, that was gross in there. I didn't like that experience. So it's like it's such backwards thinking to think that you just barely have to give your employees something. Like you're a worker to me. I don't really care about your life outside of here. I have a job that you're going to make this much or you can piss off.
Yeah. And look at these other people on Reddit. You know, I've been working for a big media company for a while, film, TV, streaming company. They let almost everyone go over 50 years old. So much legacy knowledge vanished. I know what company that person's talking about. You know, you're over 50, boom, gone.
You don't know?
I do. Well, I don't want to. I mean, there's been reports of, you know, we covered it in the newsletter. Some, you know, big media companies who just like let a whole lot of staff go a few months ago. Anyway, Ray Jaymore 85 says, I worked in recruitment briefly and I was absolutely shell-shocked at how hard it is to get a job for someone once they hit the dreaded 50 years of age number. people just assume that because someone is 50, they're some technophobe or something. It was heartbreaking. I did not last long in that job. This one is actually stunning here. When I had my first job during high school, about a decade ago, I was a cashier at a supermarket, and one of my coworkers was 83 with two jobs. 83 years old with two jobs.
Jeez.
Cashier
probably
at
just
the supermarket.
To buy medicine and stuff to survive without pain.
Yeah. A cashier at the supermarket. A drive-through at a fast food chain. I'd literally get out of work with him. He's 83 years old. And with I'd literally get out of work with him, and I would on a Friday night, and then 4 hours later, I would see him working at the drive-thru. I don't give a F how unambitious you are in life, or if it's because of a disability, which may not be immediately noticeable. Providing minimum wage services for 50 years should afford you retirement simply because you've contributed to society for 50 years. That's it. Full stop. Working in menial jobs for 5 decades to me means you've done your part. I'm not saying the state should provide you a luxurious lifestyle, but you shouldn't have to work two jobs to keep yourself alive when you have next to nothing to give to your community, left to give to your community. Well said.
Yeah, very well said.
How sad. I mean, think about that. Like you're in high school and you're working with an 83-year-old person, this guy who's just trying to live, you know, in America. You're working for a corporation at a grocery store. This person's bagging groceries, running the till, and then at 83 years old, works a full shift, leaves, and 4 hours later is working a drive-thru at a second job across town. It's heartbreaking.
Well, it is. And think about all the people in this country that die completely broke and devoid of any kind of medical care or anything like that. And on top of that, think of all the soldiers. Think of all the soldiers that die on the streets because they don't have any healthcare, no help at all. And they were a soldier in this country, which we like, hey, we support our troops. We love you until you what? Come home and get PTSD and then you're on your own. Like, you know, that's like I feel like it just makes no sense the way that we look at work as it's like, If you're a good citizen of society, you work your job, you show up every day, you know, even if you hate it, you go to work and you just put your clothes on and you do it, right? That's just like, I hate that way of thinking. It's like you enjoying your life plays no part in that thinking whatsoever.
Yeah, you just have to barely survive So you know, you have like, something happens where you literally can't go to work for a few days or something, and you don't even because of an ailment, and then you lose that income. You can't be there. Most, you know, these companies don't even want to hire you as a W-2 employee anymore. They want to hire you as a contractor. So, you know, no health benefits. You lose work for a few days and you lose pay for a few days. Like, that's just, sorry. You want to stay home because your knee hurts. You stay home when your knee hurts, and then you cannot make money while you stay home. So, I love to hear your thoughts about this. Drop me a comment below on this story. I find it two stories really on this jobs crisis. I mean, the people are doubling their salaries now by secretly working two jobs from home and being slammed for it when we shouldn't have to be working two jobs to begin with. And you know, Gen X workers may be facing the biggest unemployment crisis, unfortunately.
If I found out, like if I had employees and I found out they were working a second job because I wasn't paying them well enough, I would feel horrible. Like, yeah. If I had it, if like I said, I was in a position when I was a startup that I did that. I had to bring people in. I paid them what I could and I showed them I was paying us all the same. And like, look, we're going to get there. And then boom, we did. We started taking off and growing. And as that happened, I increased their pay every time I could. Not like, oh, well, I'll do a review at this time and I might increase your wage. No, as my wages went up, so did theirs. Like as the company's wages went up, so did theirs. And it's like, you know, nobody understands investing like that.
Yeah. No, because it, you know, again, we need to have these executives at the top that making billions while the rest make nothing.
Yeah. And complaining that their employees are working two jobs so that they can survive. Again, these people probably are barely getting ahead with a second job because your job pays so badly that they were put in a position they had to do that. It's not like they're taking advantage of a system. And that's where I get irritated that people say, well, they're just taking advantage of this system, or they're just taking advantage of this. They're trying to survive. They're trying to get food. They're trying to just be happy in their life. There's nothing wrong with that.
Right. And ultimately, that's the government's job, is to take care of its citizenry. That's the entire purpose of our government, is to protect us and take care of us. That's it. And when that fails us, time to throw off the shackles of government and start a new one, quite honestly. Thanks, Tinder, Everyone, for a great show. Yeah, we had a Tinder story in there, too. I'm going to go do some day trading, and then I got a meeting, so I can only do a little bit of that. Hope you guys, we'll see you back here tomorrow, 8:30 a.m. Eastern time. We're going to go rest our voices now.
Yes.
Grover says, thank you for watching. He's in his spot, in his cuddly spot on my Snuggie.
I can't believe you have a Snuggie. I
have a University of Pittsburgh Snuggie. He loves it. Peace out, everyone.
Bye, everyone.